Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Dion Gordon Podcast. I, of course, am your host, the connoisseur of common sense, the purveyor of authenticity, the man who calls it right down the middle, Dion Tyre Gordon. Enough from the bullshit. Let's get to work. NFL Super Wild Card Day 2. Fire, just like I anticipated, just like I said. I told y'all about that Cleveland game. I just knew. I had a feeling. I saw it coming. Pittsburgh played like shit down the stretch. Cleveland came in good. It was a bad matchup. Cleveland's offensive line, even though it was a patchwork offensive line, held up. Ben Roethlisberger's old, washed up. Pittsburgh can't run the ball. Ben's no longer in the point in his career where he can carry a team to victory. I'll get to that in a little bit. I'm going to start in chronological order. I just want to remind everyone that I told people Cleveland was going to win this game. But I'm going to start with the first game of the day, Baltimore and Tennessee. Physical bloodbath, grudge match. Two teams that can't stand each other. Bad blood stemming from last season. Tennessee knocked Baltimore out. Played earlier this season. Tennessee came up with a W again in Baltimore. You know, before that game even kicked off, Tennessee came in with pure disrespect, stomping all over the crest at midfield, M&T Bank Stadium, the Baltimore Ravens logo, dancing, celebrating, making a fuss. Jim Harbaugh came out to confront him. Mike Vrabel, Tennessee's head coach, came out to confront him. Coach is about to shoot the fade before the game even started. So you already know there was a lot of hostility, animosity, bad blood between both of these football teams. This is going to be a physical knockdown, drag-out fight to the finish. I couldn't wait to watch this game, and it did not disappoint. Baltimore 20, Tennessee 13. Tennessee came out with a hot start, went up 10-0. Tannehill threw a touchdown pass to A.J. Brown. Questionable push-off on that play, but they didn't call it, and that's neither here nor there. And then after that, it was lights off for Tennessee. The Lamar Jackson show commenced, started the game off. First of all, it comes into this game with a lot of scrutiny under his belt, a lot of pressure, a lot of people talking about Lamar. I spoke about this on the last podcast. Lamar was 0-2 in the playoffs coming into this game with less than stellar performances versus the L.A. Chargers 2 years ago and last season versus Tennessee in a divisional round playoff game with Baltimore, the best record in the league last year. Lamar was MVP. Showed up in the playoffs and completely shit the bed, turned the ball over left to right versus Tennessee last season. So Lamar Jackson came into this game with a chip on his shoulder and with something to prove, and that's exactly what Lamar did. Lamar in this game, 17-24, and Buck 79, one pick, tried to hit Miles Boykin on a corner route, underthrew it. It was a bad throw, I'll be honest and call it out. Lamar said the same thing in the postgame. That was a bad throw, it was underthrown. Man, we got caught up in the wind. Either way, it got picked off by Malcolm Butler. That was Butler's first pick in the playoffs since Super Bowl 49 when he picked off Russell Wilson at the goal line versus Seattle. But a bad ball by Lamar Jackson. And at this point in the game, everyone watching this who was anti-Lamar, who just can't wait to shit on Lamar Jackson for whatever reason, probably watched him throw this pick and said, okay, here we go. Playoff Lamar is here. He can't get it done in the postseason. He's off to a bad start, poorly thrown, underthrown ball. He threw a post route when it was really a corner route. And like I said, he admitted this after the game, but it was a bad ball. He got picked off, but after that, Lamar was lights out. I mean, Lamar got it done in the air. 17-24, bus 79, and then on the ground, rushing the ball, 16 attempts, 136, one score. It was a 45-yard touchdown run this game from Lamar. That was crazy. Pocket collapsed. Everything breaking down around him. Once again, you got to make chicken salad out of chicken shit sometimes. No one does that better than Lamar Jackson as far as running the football at the quarterback position. Lamar is so explosive, so elusive, just a transcendent talent, especially on the open field. He had on that 48-yard rushing touchdown, he ran 71.2 yards on that play. Didn't break stride, went 100 miles per hour. Kevin Byard had a chance to step up and make a play. He was nowhere close to Lamar Jackson. Just the acceleration on this dude, like the way he can go from 0 to 60 in about 1.5 seconds or something like that. I mean, the dude was just crazy, athletic, fast, just gifted in so many ways. People will always criticize Lamar Jackson because he's not your typical drop-back pocket quarterback. I don't care. The Ravens don't care. John Harbaugh doesn't care. He's effective. He wins football games. He gets shit done. I mean, people criticize Lamar for being 0-2 in the playoffs. You know what that tells me? He's been in the playoffs 2 years. He's been in the league since 2018. He's been in the playoffs every year he's been in the league. So we can criticize, you know, the way he plays, the unorthodox style of play that Lamar exhibits, but and we can criticize his ineffectiveness in the playoffs so far and his failures and the way he just hasn't come through in two playoff appearances versus the Chargers and versus the Titans last season. But he made the playoffs, and he made the playoffs again this year. Baltimore was 6-5. A lot of people had them left for dead, myself included. I said that I didn't think Baltimore was going to make the playoffs this year. I owe the Baltimore Ravens a heartfelt apology. I will take this opportunity right now to apologize to the Baltimore Ravens and John Harbaugh, Lamar Jackson, J.K. Dobbins, my man Miles Boykin from Notre Dame, Willie Snead, Dez Bryant, Mark Andrews, Duvernay, Marcus Peters, Derek Wolfe, Pernell McPhee, Marlon Humphrey, Calais Campbell. Derek Wolfe had an outstanding game. And so did Pernell McPhee. They led the team in tackles today. Marquise Hollywood Brown, got to apologize to that brother. I've been critical of him, highly critical of him all season. He has not played well. He's not played up to standard, being a second-round draft pick. A lot of high hopes for him coming out of Oklahoma, being Antonio Brown's cousin. He's been a career underachiever. But today, 7 catches, 109 on 9 targets. Nothing but credit, nothing but the utmost respect. Salute to Hollywood Brown. The game, easily the game of his career so far in his young 2-year career. That was the best football he's played. He ran aggressive routes. He got open, got some yak, made plays after the catch. Easily the best game of his young career. Keep that going. Keep that going. Shut people like me up. Prove people wrong. Play with a chip on your shoulder. I'm all about that. Play with some animosity. That's what Baltimore came out the locker room today with, animosity and hostility ready to fuck somebody up. In Baltimore, let it be known that Derrick Henry is not getting shit today. The league leader, the man who rushed for over 2,000 yards this season, the NFL leading rusher, the best running back in pro football today, only had 18 carries for 40 yards, 13 carries for 24 yards versus the stacked box, which Baltimore played with pretty much the entirety of the game. Did a great job of setting the edge with a 5-man box, making a concerted effort to shut down the running game with Derrick Henry and make Ryan Tannehill go win this football game. He wasn't capable of that. It's a great game plan by Baltimore and Don Martindale, Wink Martindale, defensive coordinator. Great job overall by everyone from the Baltimore Ravens, being led by Lamar Jackson. That's a playoff battle-tested team. This was their first playoff win since 2016. But, you know, Baltimore is one of those teams that has an established culture. You understand, when you put that uniform on, there's a standard of excellence you got to live up to. Winners have worn that uniform. Champions have put on that uniform. Baltimore's been good for about 20 years now. They're one of those teams. Baltimore's one of those teams that never sucks. Like, you don't see Baltimore picking at the top of the draft. You don't see Baltimore even with a top 5 or top 10 pick most years. Even if they don't make the playoffs, they make it competitive. I mean, what's the worst Baltimore can go? Like 6-10, 7-9? You don't see Baltimore turning in like 2-14, 3-13, 1-15 seasons where it's like, what the fuck happened to this team? You don't see that from them. Other teams come and go. They'll be good 1 year, then trash the next couple of years. They flirt with success every now and then. But teams like Baltimore and Pittsburgh, who I'll get to in a little bit, New Orleans, Kansas City, of course, New England when Brady was there for so many years, 21 years to be exact. Those teams have figured out a way to be good every year. They're in it all the time. They're a team, they're always going to be a force to be reckoned with. You know, Baltimore is always good, especially with Harbaugh coach. And when you get a guy like Lamar Jackson, the quarterback, this guy's the reigning league MVP. And people talk about this guy like he can't play. You know, this guy went 36-6 last season. He must be doing something right. For a guy who can't throw, he threw 36 touchdown passes last season to 6 interceptions, but he can't throw a football. He can't play quarterback. He should switch positions. People are fucking crazy. Lamar Jackson's a top 10 NFL quarterback in his league. Like I said earlier, I don't care how he gets it done. He gets it done. He gives his team an opportunity to win every week. They win because of him most week. What weapons does Lamar Jackson really have in Baltimore? His best receiver is Mark Andrews. He's a tight end. They had to go get Dez Bryant this year off the scrap heap out of nowhere, out of the witness protection program. They had to go dig up the scattered remains of Dez Bryant to fortify and bolster their sorry, pathetic wide receiver unit. With a struggling Hollywood Brown during the regular season, with Willie Snead, guys like that, you know, Kadri Ismail, Travis Taylor, Lee Evans, Kelly Washington, whoever the fuck is playing receiver for the Ravens these days, past or present, Lamar Jackson has no weapons to throw to. You look at other elite quarterbacks in the league, they have weapons. They have guys that you have to account for and game plan for. You know, Mahomes is throwing to Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill. You know, look at all the guys Brady has to throw to in Tampa Bay with Evans and Godwin and Antonio Brown now, Cameron Brayton, and Gronkowski. And Josh Allen's throwing to Stephon Diggs and Cole Beasley. You know, in this game, the quarterback on the opposite sideline, Tannehill's throwing to A.J. Brown, Corey Davis, handing the ball off to Derrick Henry in the backfield. Other teams have better weapons at the skill positions than Baltimore has. And yet they keep grinding. They keep finding a way to win. You know, so like I said, once again, salute to the Baltimore Ravens. I humbly apologize. I'm sorry. I counted y'all out in the first place. I should have known better. Baltimore went on the road and did what he had to do, being 6-5 at the beginning of December to 11-5, a playoff berth, and beating the AFC South champion at home in their house when they had about 16 or 21,000 fans or whatever, and the biggest capacity of any team that's had fans at the stadium this season. They all bore witness to Lamar Jackson and company kicking their ass for four quarters of this game. Falling down 10-0, total domination after that. They outscored Tennessee 20-3 after falling down 10-0. Lamar with that spectacular touchdown run. Lamar runs like he owes child support. I don't know how much further Baltimore is going to go in these playoffs. They got Buffalo next Saturday night. That's going to be a goodie. That's going to be a fun game to watch. I don't know how far Baltimore is going to go, but it's going to be fun watching them play. Lamar Jackson is the price of admission. That if you're going to buy a ticket to go watch an NFL football game, I would buy a ticket to go watch the Ravens play and watch Lamar Jackson do what he does. Back in the day, Powerade had those commercials for Michael Vick, the Michael Vick experience. Powerade nowadays needs to shoot commercials with Lamar Jackson called the Lamar Jackson experience. He's the new modern-day Michael Vick, the most fun-to-watch quarterback in the league. Not the best quarterback in the league, but the most fun-to-watch, along with Mahomes and Allen and guys like that, Aaron Rodgers as well, Kyler Murray too. All those guys are worth the price of admission by themselves. I thought overall for this game, I thought the biggest play of this game was Tennessee had a 4th-and-2 with about 10 minutes left to go in the fourth quarter. Vrabel decided to be conservative in this situation and punt, giving the ball back to Baltimore with 10 minutes on the clock. Baltimore ran the clock down to about 3.5-4 minutes, kicked the field goal to make it 20-13, and that was the final score of the game. I thought that was an egregious mistake by Vrabel. You got to be aggressive in this situation, especially going against a team that's a strong running game that can run clock, take time off the clock, and put you in a fucked up situation going forward. You have to be aggressive. It's 17-13 at that point, and on 4th-and-2, you decide to punt it back to Baltimore. Now, he said in the post game, they trusted this defense, and they were playing well, and they were, you know, doing things here and there, but fuck all that. It's the playoffs. You have to be aggressive in this situation. You know, if I'm coaching a team, I'll be conservative in the first half. I don't believe in chasing points and taking wild risk in the first half. In the second half, when you have an opportunity to get back in the game, when you need to make a big play, when your momentum is stalled out and you need to do something to jumpstart your team, it's 17-13, 10 minutes to go on the clock. It's 4th-and-2. You got Derrick Henry in the backfield. I'm trying to get this first down. But that's just me. Obviously, I'm not Mike Vrabel. I do not coach the Tennessee Titans. The real Mike Vrabel does coach the Tennessee Titans. He decided to punt in that situation. It didn't work out for them. Now they're going home 20-13 Baltimore. Like I said, all types of disrespect at the end of the game. I'm here for it. You could tell that win meant a lot to Baltimore. They worked hard. They earned it. They deserved it. Big challenge on Saturday night versus Buffalo. Definitely looking forward to that game. Predictions coming in the middle of the week. Moving on to the second game of the day, New Orleans versus Chicago. I ain't going to say much about this game. To me, this was the most predictable game on the wild card weekend. No one in their right mind believed the Chicago Bears were going to go into the Superdome and beat the New Orleans Saints in a playoff game. I know the Saints have struggled in recent years in playoff games, losing heartbreaking games to the Minnesota Vikings with the Minneapolis Miracle, losing to the Rams in the NFC Championship game after being down 13-0 with that questionable pass interference call at the end of the fourth quarter, going to overtime, losing it eventually to the Rams. Last season, losing to Minnesota in the first round, Kirk Cousins came in there and crushed the buildings. I know it's been a tough go for the New Orleans Saints in the playoffs, but this one was an easy layup, slam dunk, alley-oop, no contest. There was no fucking way the Chicago Bears being led by Mitchell Trubisky were going to walk into the Superdome and beat the New Orleans Saints in the playoff game. Was not happening. No question, no doubt. Vince McMahon theme song, no chance in hell that the Bears are going to walk in and win this game. The Bears had 239 total net yards, 9 points. They lost 21-9. They had no offense whatsoever. They were never a threat. This game was never in doubt. I knew the Bears were going to lose this game in the first quarter when they just completed a pass down the far sideline. Tough catch. Then they get the ball and they try a little trick play, a little bit of razzle dazzle. They come out with a flea flicker. Trubisky takes the pitch, the 50-yard line, sets his feet, throws a dime downfield, a beautiful throw, perfect pass to Mitchell Trubisky. Unfortunately, his intended receiver, Javon Wims, couldn't make the catch. The ball went right through his hands, incomplete. Right then and there, I said to myself, they're not winning this game. If you're going to beat the Saints in the road playoff game, you have to convert plays like that. You can't just fuck that up. You can't just drop an easy touchdown pass like that and expect to beat the New Orleans Saints on the road in the Superdome. It ain't happening. It's real simple. It's real cut and dry. Football, like I said before many times, is always going to be about blocking, tackling, game plans, and matchups. The Saints don't, the Bears don't match up with the Saints. The defense played well. The defense from Chicago did what they could to keep the game close. It was 21-9. I predicted 31-16 New Orleans. Without Roquan Smith, I thought Kamara would come out and have a field day. That wasn't the case. They kept him in check. They had my man Manti Te'o out there playing, a.k.a. Catfish. But, you know, Bears defense held up, did their job. They were very respectable in the afternoon. But at the same time, the offense is not going to be able to answer the challenge. I already knew this. Trubisky, Saints have a great defense in their own right. Their front seven is nasty, even without Trey Hendrickson playing today. But going against Trubisky, you didn't need Hendrickson. You could take the day off. No one in their right mind believed Mitchell Trubisky was going to take the Chicago Bears into the New Orleans Superdome and come out with a victory. Once again, Vince McMahon theme song, no chance in hell. Saints move on. Got the Bucs coming in this week. Round three, Saints-Buccaneers division rival. Can the Saints beat the Buccaneers three times in one season? Me personally, I still don't think Tampa Bay matches up with New Orleans as far as the front seven is concerned. The Bucs have applied pressure on Tom Brady all season long in all two games they played against him. Last time they played was 38-3 on Sunday Night Football. It's all about matchups, and the matchups up front, to me, favor the New Orleans Saints, and that's why the Saints have had so much success this season versus Tampa. Once again, predictions coming later in the week, but right now I'm leaning towards New Orleans. New Orleans is my Super Bowl pick anyway. I picked New Orleans versus Kansas City, so spoiler alert, I really can't. As much as I like Tom Brady, I don't see the Buccaneers winning this game. Things could change throughout the week. Like I said, official predictions coming on later this week. But as of right now, I'm leaning towards New Orleans. But the game of the day, now we got that out of the way, the real game of the day, the Dion Gordon podcast special. As first reported on the Dion Gordon podcast, I told each and every one of you motherfuckers Cleveland was going to win this game. I said that with confidence and conviction. I said that with every fiber of my being. The upset special this week, I just felt it. The Cleveland Browns. Amidst all the controversy, amidst not having your coach and different players due to COVID, Stefanski coaching the game at home, Alex Van Pelt calling plays live at the game, you're missing key players in your secondary like Denzel Ward, you had key players in your offensive line being out, you had to fill in with some guys here and there. Baker Mayfield in the postgame said he just met some dude named Blake before the game started. And that was legitimately their first time meeting each other. This guy's going to be out there blocking and providing protection for you in the fourth quarter of a playoff game versus the Pittsburgh Steelers. Nevertheless, the Cleveland Browns persisted. Nevertheless, the Cleveland Browns figured out a way to come out with a victory. They came in and smacked earth, wind, fire, and ice out the Pittsburgh Steelers. What a performance that was by the Cleveland Browns. This game was over on the very first play from scrimmage for Pittsburgh. Reminiscent of Super Bowl 48, Denver versus Seattle, when the first snap of the game went over Peyton Manning's head out the back of the end zone for a safety, and it was 2-0 Seattle Seahawks, and the camera zoomed in on Peyton Manning's face, you could just see the misery and failure written all over Peyton's face. He had the same look on his face that his father, Archie, always had back in the 70s when he was getting his ass kicked playing for the Saints, and the exact same look that Eli always had after every interception he threw. That Manning face. Peyton Manning knew this game was over with. And today, when Marquise Pouncey snapped that ball over Ben Roethlisberger's head and it was recovered in the end zone by Cleveland for a touchdown, they knew, and every member of Steeler Nation had to know, this is over. I don't care how many times you've beaten the Browns in the past, all the success you've had versus Cleveland, Roethlisberger, I think it was like 23-2-1 versus Cleveland coming into this game. They own Cleveland. They body Cleveland. Every time they line up against them, they destroy the Browns. The Browns are a footnote. The Browns are a joke, an embarrassment. It's homecoming. It's like Alabama playing versus the Citadel. It's an easy win, a scheduled victory, but not today. 48-37, Cleveland with the victory, moving on in the NFL playoffs as accurately predicted right here on the Dion Gordon podcast. I hate to say I told you so. Well, actually, I don't. I told you so. I told you so. I told you so. Upset special of the week. Bet whatever you got. Bet your stimulus check that the Browns were going to beat the Pittsburgh Steelers. I told you it was going to happen, and it went out and came to fruition. I said the formula for success for Cleveland would be for Baker Mayfield to not come out and try to be the hero, not trying to win the game by himself, lean on the running game with Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb. Cleveland ran for 127 yards in this game. Chubb had 76, Hunt had 48. Baker Mayfield, 21-34, 263, three scores, no picks, clean game. No turnovers from Baker Mayfield in this game. His first ever NFL playoff game, he looked like he belonged out there. Mayfield was the one who resembled a seasoned and poised veteran who had played in playoff games before. Ben looked like he was making his debut in the NFL playoffs today. Four picks, three in the first half. They threw for about 500 yards, 501 to be exact. 47-68, 501, four touchdowns, four picks for Ben Roethlisberger. If your quarterback has to throw it 68 times, chances are you're getting blown out, you're getting destroyed, you're getting your asses kicked, you're getting seven different shades of shit beat down your leg, you're getting earth, wind, fire, and ice smacked the fuck out of you. And that's what Cleveland did to Pittsburgh in the first quarter of this game. 28-0 Cleveland in the first quarter. Statement made. 35-10 going into halftime. Now, this game got a little close. It was about 35-23 in the second half. And I'm sure every Cleveland Browns fan remembers the fumble, the drive, the decision, all the heartbreaking, devastating, deflating moments in Cleveland sports history. If you're a Cleveland Browns fan, I'm sure you had all those moments on replay going through your mind in the second half of that game when Pittsburgh started to come back and make a game out of it. But you held on. You were able to take care of business and hold on for the victory, 48-37. You didn't blow it, didn't choke. I was a little bit worried about it, but then I remembered they're the Cleveland Browns, not the Atlanta Browns. They're not from Atlanta, not from the state of Georgia. They don't blow leads like this. So they're going to hang on and win. I had confidence in you, Cleveland. I thought you could do it. I remember the last time you were in the playoffs. You got up to a 14-0 lead and ended up losing to the Pittsburgh Steelers in a wild card playoff game, 36-33. I remember Kelly Holcomb being out there against Tommy Maddox. But today was a different story. You executed down the stretch. Mayfield made throws. You got first down yardage in the run game with Chubb and Hunt. You controlled the clock, time of possession. Your defense stepped up and made plays when they had to. Got another pick in the fourth quarter to seal the deal. It was a great game by Cleveland. You can't say enough. Tip of the cap to the Cleveland Browns. They came in and squared up with the big bully who's been beating them up and taking in lunch money for so many years. And they punched the bully right between the eyes and sent a statement that today I'm no longer going to be fucked with. Big little brother grew up and kicked big brother's ass, and the Cleveland Browns are moving on to the second round of the NFL playoffs to play against the defending champion Kansas City Chiefs. Who saw that coming? I don't think anybody saw that coming. I don't think anybody had the Cleveland Browns getting to the second round of the NFL playoffs this year. Not too many people had them beating Pittsburgh today. I saw it coming. Pittsburgh got to an 11-0 start, and then went 1-5 down the stretch, regular season playoffs included. Finished up the season 12-4, lost in the first round of the NFL playoffs. 11-0 start, 1-5 finish, and that one win they had to come from behind to beat Indianapolis. They got pushed around, manhandled, and beat up on Monday Night Football versus Cincinnati. And right then and there, I knew this team is not going to go far in the NFL playoffs. This team is not going to last. They can't run the football. Ben, at this stage of his career, is not good enough to carry the offense the way he did in years past. The defense is missing star players like Bud Dupree and Devin Bush. They were a suspect football team coming into the playoffs, and it bore out, and it came to fruition. They got cleaned up by the Cleveland Browns. You're down 28-0, 35-10 at half versus your division rival. And that's reflective of a lot of things going wrong with your football team. Pittsburgh was not built to last, and they're gone. It's 48-37 Cleveland. Pittsburgh is going home. Cleveland's moving on. There's certainly going to be a lot of questions about Ben Roethlisberger post-game. He was seen in the post-game cameras by NBC with tears in his eyes. He was crying, very emotional on the sideline. You wonder, does he think to himself, does he know that this is probably the end? He's hinted at retirement this year and in the past couple of years. You know, Ben is 39 and has one more year left on his contract. And at this point, his 2021 salary cap number is $41.25 million in the final year of a two-year $68 million contract extension he signed in April 2019. Last March, Pittsburgh lowered the 2020 cap number from $33.5 million to $23.75 million by converting $19.5 million to his $21 million 2020 compensation into a signing bonus. His 2021 cap number was raised by $9.75 million in the process. This is further problematic due to the point that the salary cap is shrinking for next season. I think it shrinks by at least $20 million. So every team's going to have to be a little bit more frugal with their money and contracts and how they spend and who they throw money at. So this further compounds the problem. Ben is costing $41.25 million next year against the cap at 39 years of age and seemingly in decline. Pittsburgh, at some point or another, has to make a conscious decision. We have to address the quarterback position. Ben's 39, not going to play forever. They drafted Mason Rudolph a couple years ago. He's terrible. So I would look for Pittsburgh somewhere in the first three rounds of this upcoming draft to take a quarterback. Now, whether Ben likes it or not, who fucking cares? The team has to make a decision. You've heard some rumblings online, social media, on television. I'm sure there's people in Pittsburgh and the surrounding areas who have talked about this. So starting with the game on Sunday, is Mike Tomlin's job safe? Should Mike Tomlin be on the hot seat? I'm not suggesting that. Because there's only two black coaches in the NFL as it is. I'm certainly not going to advocate for one of the two brothers coaching in the league to get fired. But the noise, the talk that you're hearing from football fans, Steeler fans, anybody who follows the game, people are asking questions. Should Mike Tomlin be on the hot seat? Does he have a grasp, a handle on this football team? You think back to 2017, Tomlin. A week before playing the Jacksonville Jaguars in the playoffs, Tomlin was asked about the game. He said he's already preparing for New England. You think back to 2016 when Antonio Brown was making the IG video in the locker room after they had just beaten Kansas City, and Tomlin was addressing the team, getting ready for the conference championship game that year against New England. And now you got Juju Smith-Schuster with his antics on TikTok and before the game dancing on team logos in midfield. And there's all these... There always seems to be some type of locker room shenanigans going on with the Pittsburgh Steelers. There always seems to be some maturity issues, some type of controversy. I love Mike Tomlin. I think he's one of the top five coaches in the league, but sometimes you have to ask a legitimate question. Does he have a firm handle on this football team? Has he lost the locker room? That's another question you could ask. Pittsburgh has only had three head coaches since 1969, Chuck Knoll, Bill Cowher, and Mike Tomlin. This is a organization that prides itself on stability, continuity, having the same head coach year in and year out. You can look at Tomlin's win-loss record. That's enough to advocate for him keeping his job. Like, once again, I certainly would not advocate for a brother losing his job when there's only two brothers coaching in the league anyway. In Tomlin's defense, I would say he's coached a team that's overachieved in a lot of areas. They don't have a running game. They lost players defensively, as I alluded to earlier. They have an aging quarterback who appears to be in decline. Juju Smith-Schuster is not a number one receiver. He's a number two receiver. You're seeing the difference made by the absence of Antonio Brown. Without AB taking the pressure off Juju, Juju looks very ordinary. Juju does more work on TikTok than he does during the game. I go back to last season with Pittsburgh when they almost made the playoffs with Duck Hodges, third-string quarterback. Ben was out. Rudolph was out. He was terrible anyway. And they're playing with a guy named Devlin Hodges, and they go down to week 17 to make the playoffs. came up short, missed the playoffs last year, but the fact that they were even in playoff contention last year with the litany of injuries and controversies on and off the field that Pittsburgh had, I think speaks a lot to Mike Tomlin's coaching and leadership. So me personally, I do not think there should be a head coaching change in Pittsburgh. I do think there needs to be something done about the quarterback position, whether Ben wants to play next year or not. They certainly need to draft and bring in a young quarterback and groom him to be the successor to Ben Roethlisberger. All good things come to an end. He's been there since 2004. You're not going to play quarterback forever for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Tom Brady doesn't play in New England anymore. At some point, San Francisco moved on from Joe Montana. You know, there's a precedent for these type of things. You know, you look at Peyton Manning finishing his career in Denver as opposed to Indianapolis. There's a precedent for these type of things. Legendary quarterbacks who are synonymous with one organization being let go, being traded, dealt somewhere else, finishing their career on a different team. Because at some point, the organization just gets tired of it. Like, we recognize what you've done for the organization. Thanks for the memories. You've won a lot of games. You've won championships. We've been a perennial contender every year with you as the quarterback. But at some point, organizationally, you have to figure out an exit strategy and just move on. You look at the center for the Pittsburgh Steelers. You look at Maurkice Pouncey. This talks about him retiring in the offseason. So Pittsburgh has a lot to figure out and unpack in the offseason. This was a devastating loss at home. I realize there's no fans there, but still, you got your asses kicked. Salute to the Cleveland Browns coming in, handling business, doing what they were supposed to do. Onward and upward to the Kansas City Chiefs. I'll have a prediction about that in the next podcast, but this is a big win for Cleveland. This is their first road playoff win since 1969, first playoff win since 94 when Belichick was coaching there. Big time. It's a team that went 0-16 a couple of years ago. Now they're in the second round of the playoffs. So you got to respect what they're doing in Cleveland and acknowledge the growth and improvement they've made as an organization going forward. Before I wrap this up, I just want to point out two things that stuck out to me that I noticed throughout NFL Super Wild Card weekend. Number one, the road teams were 4-2. L.A. Rams, Tampa Buccaneers, Cleveland Browns, Baltimore Ravens all emerged victorious this weekend, showing you the importance of actually having fans in the stadium, having people in the building, having that home field advantage. You work all season long to get a home field advantage, to win your division and play a home playoff game. And then this year, with the pandemic being what it is and the rules being what they are, you either can't have fans at the stadium or you have limited capacity, as you saw in Tennessee and a few other places, but it negates the home field advantage. It makes it easier for the road team to come in and play well and come out with a victory. And you saw that four times this weekend. I thought that was interesting. The second thing that really stuck out to me was the success of the young quarterbacks throughout the NFL and throughout the NFL playoffs. This past weekend, you saw Baker Mayfield, Josh Allen, and Lamar Jackson and Jared Goff win playoff football games. Three of those guys were in the same draft. The 2018 draft consisted of Josh Allen, Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen. Baker Mayfield was the number one pick that year out of Oklahoma and Heisman Trophy winner. And Lamar Jackson, who was picked number 30 to Baltimore. Three of the five quarterbacks taken in the first round of the 2018 NFL draft are still playing football. The four quarterbacks still in the NFC, Patrick Mahomes, Baker Mayfield, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, are all 26 years of age or younger. I think Baker is the oldest one out of that group at 26 years old. Mahomes has been in the league since 2017. The other three, as I just mentioned, have been in the league since 2018. What I'm trying to say is, what I try to convey to so many people when I talk football is the formula for success in the current modern day, right now, 2021 NFL is that you draft a young quarterback in the first round, and while you're paying him on his rookie deal, which doesn't cost you that much money against the salary cap, the money you save from not overpaying on your rookie quarterback, you can take that money and fill in the blanks for the rest of your team, whatever areas of need that you have. You can go out and spend money on free agents and make some trades. You can fill in the rest of your roster with the money you save from paying your rookie quarterback. I've detailed this. I've outlined this so many times, both on this podcast or in casual conversation. Mm-hmm. This is the formula for success in the current modern-day NFL. I don't know how many examples I have to give people. There's six teams still playing NFL football right now, still in the NFL playoffs. The four in the AFC, I just said, are under the age of 26. They're all first-round quarterbacks in the recent drafts, 2017-2018. In the NFC, Green Bay and the Rams are playing each other. Each team has a first-round draft pick at quarterback. Jared Goff was the first pick in the 2016 NFL draft. Aaron Rodgers was the 22nd pick in the 2005 NFL draft. The only two teams who don't have former first-round draft pick quarterbacks playing are Tampa and New Orleans, and Drew Brees and Tom Brady are two of the best quarterbacks who ever played the game. Drew Brees is a former second-round pick. Tom Brady is a sixth-round pick, but Tom Brady is a complete anomaly. You are not going to find a generational talent, 198, in the sixth round every single year. That doesn't happen. Tom Brady is an anomaly. He's an outlier. He's a once-in-a-lifetime talent that the Patriots stumbled upon in the sixth round of the 2001 NFL draft. Luckily for the Patriots, that quarterback was able to help lead them to six Super Bowl championships, nine Super Bowl appearances, 13 conference championship game appearances, and the greatest dynasty in the history of professional football. That doesn't happen on a regular basis. If you want to win, if you want to be a perennially consistent contending playoff football team, draft a quarterback in the first round and build around him. Identify who you want to be the face of your franchise for the next 10, 12, 15 years. Go get that guy in the first round and build around him and try to win on his rookie deal. I will provide more examples. The reigning Super Bowl champions, much to my chagrin, Kansas City Chiefs, won a championship last year while Pat Mahomes was still on his rookie deal. The LA Rams got to the Super Bowl in 2018 when Jared Goff was on his rookie deal. Philadelphia in 2017, Carson Wentz played MVP caliber football for 13 games, which positioned the Philadelphia Eagles to make a run to Super Bowl 52, which they ended up winning. But they got there largely because Carson Wentz was playing lights out football for 13 games in the 2017 season. Carson Wentz was playing on his rookie deal at that time. The Seattle Seahawks won a championship with Russell Wilson on his rookie deal. Now, I realize Russell's a second-round pick, but still, you can find a franchise great quarterback in the first or second round. You're more likely to find that quarterback in the first or second round than you are in rounds 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. Pittsburgh, who I was just talking about, won a championship when Ben Roethlisberger was on his rookie deal. These are all recent examples in the past 15 years of teams copy and pasting this formula for success and bearing it out to fruition and winning championships, winning with their quarterback on their rookie deal. I cannot be more adamant about that. So once again, if you need an example of what I'm talking about, the eight teams still remaining, six of them have first-round draft pick quarterbacks. We can go back to last year's playoffs, 2019 NFL playoffs. Seven of the 12 teams who made the playoffs last year had former first-round draft pick quarterbacks. In the AFC, you had Ryan Tannehill, Lamar Jackson, Pat Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, Josh Allen. And over in the NFC playoffs, you had Carson Wentz and Aaron Rodgers. Seven of the 12 teams in last year's NFL playoffs featured first-round draft picks at the quarterback position. So once again, I hate to always shoehorn the 49ers in every football conversation, but fuck it, it's my favorite team. Just let it happen. Fuck it. When I talk to other 49er fans and they're telling me that the Niners don't need to go draft a quarterback in the first round, that's stupid. Most of them are going to be a bust. Most first-round quarterbacks don't work out. You can find a good look at Brady. Brady was a sixth-round quarterback. Joe Montana was a third-round quarterback. That's fucking stupid. You're stuck in the past. It's an antiquated way of looking at things. You're not paying attention to the current trends, the current, modern, right fucking now trends of the NFL. It just boggles my mind to see so many people just stuck in the past and, like I said, having an antiquated way of thinking. I don't understand it. It's right there in front of you. You're watching the games. You follow the NFL. Look at the trends that are going on. This is how teams win football games now. Not every first-round quarterback is guaranteed to be great. I understand that. You got Sam Darnold out there. You got Josh Rosen, Mitch Trubisky. You know, I get that there's been first-round quarterbacks who have busted in the NFL, but that shouldn't deter you from taking a first-round quarterback in the future. I don't understand that level, that reasoning, that way of thinking, that rationale. It doesn't make any sense to me at all. But I digress. I'll save that for another podcast to further elaborate on that. This was about day two of the NFL Super Wild Card Weekend. Moving on to the divisional round. Next podcast will be predictions, my predictions for what I think is going to happen. I got another upset special. I'm going to hold that until the next one. But once again, looking forward to the matchups. Cleveland versus Kansas City. Baltimore and Buffalo in the snow. Saturday night in Buffalo. That's going to be a knockdown, drag out. Rams and Green Bay. Then you got round three of Tampa and New Orleans. Can New Orleans beat Tampa three times in one season? We shall see, but I'm definitely looking forward to it. This weekend is going to be fire. NFL divisional round, playoff football is going to be fire. It's going to be awesome. A lot of intriguing matchups, a lot of compelling storylines. Definitely can't wait. So until next time, that's the end of this edition of the Dion Gordon Podcast. Picture me rolling. I'm out.